Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1940. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you each week from Hollywood. And starring Fanny Brice, Lou Holtz, Connie Boswell, Hanley Stafford, Benny Rubin, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. Tonight's guests are the stars of the new Paramount picture, The Great Victor Herbert, Alan Jones, Mary Martin, and Walter Connolly. And here is your host for this hour of good news, Edward Arnold.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Our good news show tonight is divided into two parts. One part right here in Hollywood and another part all the way across the continent in New York. And our guests tonight are stars of the fine Paramount picture, The Great Victor Herbert, which has been receiving so many grand reviews. And the stars really need no introduction to our regular good news listeners because they're all old friends. Alan Jones, for instance, was one of the stars of the very first good news program. Mary Martin was on the program last year. And Walter Connolly, who plays the part of Victor Herbert in the picture, said that we...
Wait a minute, Ed.
What's the matter, Meredith?
You say Mary Martin's going to be on the program tonight?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, boy. Oh, jumping jeepers. Mary Martin.
She'll be cut in from New York.
From New York?
Yeah.
And I'm in Hollywood. Well, I guess 1939 just ain't my year.
Oh, now cheer up, old fella. Look at it this way. If you could talk to Mary on the telephone, you'd feel pretty good, wouldn't you?
Well, sure, but who can afford to make a call to New York and in the daytime at that? I generally wait till 8 o'clock to call Redondo Beach.
Wait a minute. Just keep your shirt on.
Okay.
Mary Martin is in New York with Alan Jones and Walter Connolly, but you'll be able to hear her speak to you just as if she was in the studio here.
She'll speak to me personally?
Oh, I'm sure she will.
Personally. Well, I suppose Mrs. Wilson will hear what she says, but what the heck do I care? Put her on, Ed.
All right. Spoken like a true man of the world, Meredith. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just to prove this is on the level, we switch you to New York, where you will first hear the voice of Alan Jones.
Thank you, Eddie. We all send our cordial greetings to our friends in Hollywood and to all the listeners of the Good News program. Of course, Mary Martin and I are old alumni or something of the Good News show, so we are getting kind of a special kick out of this program. But I think Walter Connolly is enjoying it, too.
I certainly am. But you know what I keep wondering, Alan?
What's that?
I can't help wondering what old Victor Herbert would think of this fantastic setup. His music being played for people in New York and heard by people all over the world simultaneously.
There was certainly nothing like it in his day, and I wonder what he would think if he could see our picture and see you waving his baton, Walter.
Or if he could hear you singing his music.
We better let it go. Mary, would you like to say a few words to the radio audience?
Well, I'm getting a terrific kick out of being here, the preview and all.
You sound like you were standing in the forecourt of Grandma's Chinese Theater in Hollywood.
I've never stood there except in the ticket line.
You will, dear. Now I think it's time for you to say something nice and personal to Meredith Wilson, who's waiting on Hollywood. All right, Meredith, here it comes.
Meredith, I send my affectionate greetings to you and to Mrs. Wilson.
Well, I'll be hong diddled.
Well, never mind that, Meredith. Now I want you to start us off with a medley of songs in honor of New York. Songs that will recall the gay Broadway days of Victor Herbert. Warren Hull may do a little singing if he doesn't change his mind. All right.
Come on downtown, we'll have a jubilee. Herald Square, I've been there, but it's not for mine. Come on downtown and I'll show you a grand old time.
Way downtown, go on the way downtown.
There you see ladies with hair nicely curled, just like the dames in the journals and boys.
That's the place to be when the sun goes
present some sociable prizes away downtown. Walk me around again, Willie, around, around, around. The music is dreamy, it's peaches and creamy. Oh, don't let my feet touch the ground. I feel like a ship on an ocean of joy. I just want to holler out loud, ship ahoy. Oh, walk me around again, Willie.
Ladies and gentlemen, Maxwell House presents Fanny Bryce's Baby Snooks. Poor Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, has his hands full again. His silver cigarette lighter is missing, and he suspects his loving child had something to do with its disappearance. Snooks won't admit it, so we find them both at a... I haven't got the heart to tell you where he took us, so just listen.
Snooks, dear, I'm going to give you one last chance. Did you take my silver lighter?
Is this a police station?
No.
I didn't take it.
All right, I'm forced to believe you. But we'll see the psychiatrist just the same.
See who?
The psychiatrist. He's a doctor. And your behavior certainly needs looking into.
What's he gonna do, Daddy?
He'll just psychoanalyze you.
Will it hurt?
Well, of course not. He'll explore your subconscious and break down your phobias.
I wanna go home.
Now sit still. The only reason I brought you here is because you've become so hard to handle. You refuse to go to school, you won't play with your little friends, and worst of all, you make up those fantastic fibs. How you do it is beyond me.
Ain't I smart, Daddy?
Yes, very. It doesn't do any good to punish you, and I hope this doctor can get to the root of the trouble. Oh, shh. Somebody's coming.
Look at Daddy. Here comes a man walking on his knees.
Yes.
Is he the doctor?
No. I think he's one of the patients. Shh.
What's he crawling around for?
I don't know. Hang on to my hand, Snooks.
Are you scared, Daddy?
No. Keep quiet.
Oh, excuse me. Have you got a piece of toast?
Huh?
Have you got a piece of toast?
Are you hungry, mister?
Oh. No, of course not. I'm tired.
Tired? No, sorry. No toast.
Oh, what a shame. I must find some. Oh, toodaloo, pip-pip.
Toodaloo, pip-pip.
Oh, hello, Mr. Higgins.
Oh, hello, Doctor. Say, what's the matter with that fellow? He asked us for toast.
Yes, poor chap has an obsession. He thinks he's a poached egg and he wants to sit down. Nothing serious. There's nothing to worry about. Come on in, my child.
Why, yes, Snooks. There's nothing to worry about.
Now, my dear, your daddy has told me all about you on the telephone. I just want you to answer a few questions. First,
Are you going to psychoanalyze her now, Doc?
Yes. Just be quiet, please.
Oh, pardon me.
To begin with, Snooks, are you a boy or a girl?
Huh?
I say, are you a boy or a girl?
I'm a boy.
Mm-hmm. And when you grow up, will you be a man or a woman?
A man.
Mm-hmm. Now look at me closely. What am I, a train, a Christmas tree, or a bottle of mustard?
None of them.
Oh, thank heaven.
Well, what am I?
A banana.
Oh, Snooks, what's the matter with you? Why are you giving the doctor these crazy answers?
Because he's asking me crazy questions.
Well, this is all a part of a test. How can the doctor
psychoanalyze... Mr. Higgins.
Oh, excuse me.
Snooks, I understand you refuse to attend school. Don't you like to go to school?
Uh-huh.
You do like going to school?
Uh-huh. And I like coming home, too.
Well?
But I don't like staying there in between.
You see, Doctor?
A very normal reaction. Tell me, Snooks, do you have dreams?
Uh-huh.
All the time?
No, only when I'm sleeping.
I see.
Yeah.
Are they nice dreams?
Beautiful.
Beautiful, huh? Did you ever dream you were a lark flitting through the welkin?
More beautiful than that.
Like what?
I dreamed I was an elephant squirting water through my nose.
Very funny. Very funny.
Great significance, Mr. Higgins.
Oh, sure.
Snooks, have you ever had any dreams about cats?
Uh-huh.
Tell me, what kind of clothes does Pussy wear?
Clothes?
You know what I mean. Does she wear wool? Does she wear feathers?
Ain't he never seen a cat?
He's seen plenty of cats. He wants you to say a cat has fur.
Why?
Because that's the right answer.
Are you sure, Mr. Higgins?
Why, sir? I think so. Oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to butt in.
Thank you. Snooks, please remove your right shoe and stocking.
What for?
I want to examine your brain.
Huh?
You gotta look at my feet to see my brain?
I just want to tickle the sole of your foot. It's like a game.
I want to go home.
Oh, what kind of a test?
It's just to test a certain reflex. Babinski's sign. Come on, Snooks, take off your shoe.
No,
tickle
me on the arm.
Oh, listen, Doc. Is all this necessary? I just want to find out about my lighter.
Mr. Higgins, we must approach it very slowly. This child is full of inhibition. Do you ever hit her?
Only in self-defense. What about my lighter?
I didn't take it.
Well, we'll soon find out. I'll give her the association test. But I shall have to ask you not to interrupt, Mr. Higgins.
Okay.
Now, Snooks, I want you to close your eyes and relax. All right, just relax. Now, I'm going to mention some words, and as I say them, I want you to respond with the first word that comes to your mind. Understand?
No.
You do, too. He means if he says black, he wants you to say what?
Mr. Higgins.
Uh-huh, I'm sorry.
It's very simple, Snooks. For instance, if I say the word hot, you instantly think of cold. Understand?
Understand.
All right.
All right.
No.
Yes.
He hasn't started yet. Excuse me. Go ahead, Doc.
All right, sir. Now, here's the first word. Top.
Bottom. I like it.
Round.
Black. Do some more.
Oh, keep quiet.
You too.
Oh.
Relax, Snooks. Here's the next word. Light.
Dark.
Joy.
Sorrow.
Whoa.
Oh, what's the use?
Please, Mr. Higgins. That word indicates a very important psychic sublimation.
Get to the light. Here.
Don't be impatient. Let's continue, sir.
No, I want to go home.
Silver.
Home.
Lighter.
Home.
That settles it. Mr. Higgins, I'll stake my professional reputation that this child had nothing to do with the disappearance of your silver light.
Oh, honestly? Oh, thank heaven. I'd hate to think she'd hold out so long.
She's a perfectly normal child, and you can believe me, she's entirely innocent.
Can we go now, Daddy?
Yes, dear. And I want to apologize for ever having suspected you. I'll never be hasty with you again.
No more spanking?
No, never.
All right. Here's your lighter back.
What? Well, I'll be.
Why, you...
Say, Warren, you going home for Christmas this year?
Ah, you bet I am, Eddie. I'll be there Christmas morning in time for breakfast. And boy, oh boy, what an occasion that'll be. Right now, I can picture the family sitting around the table and Mother coming through the kitchen door, saying...
Well, children, I have a special treat for you this morning.
Guys, look, pancakes.
And look, Mom's got log cabin syrup, too.
Yeah, and Maxwell House coffee for little Warnie.
Why, of course. And I'm proud to know, Warren, that the makers of your Maxwell House coffee also make this wonderfully delicious log cabin syrup.
Yes, America's favorite table syrup in the distinctive log cabin container is brought to you by the makers of Maxwell House coffee. And here's news for you housewives. You can now get log cabin syrup at a new low price, the lowest in its history. So when the folks come home for Christmas, surprise them with a real holiday breakfast of golden brown pancakes, crisp bacon, log cabin syrup, and Maxwell House coffee. The coffee that has added extra enjoyment to millions of breakfasts for more than 50 years. In fact, this Christmas, more people will be enjoying Maxwell House coffee than ever before in its history. And we're happy to say that your increased purchases of Maxwell House help us to give it to you at prices lower than ever before. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House coffee lately, get a pound tomorrow, won't you? We think your own enjoyment and satisfaction will tell you this new Maxwell House is now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a song from our own Connie Boswell. And she's going to sing one of my favorites. I Can't Give You Anything But Love.
I can't give you anything but love. Baby, that's the only thing I've plenty of, baby. Dream a while, dream a while. Someday you'll find your happiness, and I guess all those things your heart has pined for. I love to see you looking swell. Baby, with diamond rings, your worth doesn't sell, baby. Till my lucky day, you know darn well. I can't give you anything but love.
I can't give you anything but love, my baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of, my baby. Why don't you dream a while, someday you'll find your happiness. And I guess all the things your heart has pined for. Gee, I'd love to see you looking swell, baby. With diamond rings, your worth does not sell, my baby. Till my lucky day, you know I've done well, baby. I can't give you anything.
Nobly done, Connie, nobly done. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that internationally celebrated ball of fire, raconteur, and linguist, and my favorite dilly-dallier, Lou Holtz.
Oh, thank you, Edward. Edward, thank you. Thank you, Edward. I must say that you certainly do turn a pretty phrase.
You like it, Lou?
Love it. Adore it with all my heart, bless you. You know, Edward, it has been whispered behind fans, mark you, that Holtz is a sucker for a bit of flattery.
Well, it's not flattery, old fellow.
It really isn't flattery?
No, it's just that.
Oh, Edward, I love you dearly.
Oh, go on. It's just that I'm filled to overflowing with the milk of human kindness. anything wrong with that?
No, except that you need a little skimming.
I'm surprised at you, Lou, to think that you, of all people, would come here and make up jokes about my figure.
Edward, hear me. You cut me to the quick. I'm a beast and a cad. Mark, you a beast and a cad? Of course, it's ridiculous about your being oversized. Why, anyone could think of 500 people that are four times as fat as you.
Of course.
Name one.
Don't talk to me.
All right, I'll talk to the boys in the orchestra. Hello, fellas.
Hi,
Lal. Hey, Lal Ganga. A prodigy. That's the sweetest kid in town, Eddie. The sweetest kid in town.
You're feeling pretty good tonight, aren't you?
Make me know it, Dad. Make me know it. Why shouldn't I feel good? Have you read, Edward? Have you read what the critics are saying about Holtze?
No.
Well, wait till I show you. I have them here in my pocket. I always carry my notes. Well, that's funny. I thought I must have left them home. Would you mind handing me a telephone, please?
Oh, you don't have to go through
all that. Telephone. Hello, operator. I want you to give me Fulton, 1469, thank you.
Fulton, 1469, thank you.
Thank you, lovely girl.
Hello.
Hello, sugar. This is Lulu Holt speaking. Holt, you remember?
Oh, Mr. Holt.
See here, sweetie pie, I want you to do me a favor. Send someone up to my room. I want you to look in the second drawer of my chiffon robe. That's the negligee drawer.
The negligee drawer, yes?
Yes, bless you. There's an envelope there that I want you to send to me. You just fish around, you'll find it. I think it's next to my long flannel nightshirt.
Long flannel nightshirt. Is that all?
Yeah, that covers everything. goodbye, lover.
Goodbye.
Is that the way you always talk to telephone operators, Lou?
Au contraire, Edward. That means on the contrary.
I see.
I'm very formal. I happen to know this girl very well. Know her very well because she was married to my fifth cousin, but now they're divorced.
Why?
Well, he prayed for twins and she presented him with triplets.
He divorced her for that?
Yes, but it serves him right. If you marry a telephone operator, you're bound to get the wrong number. Hi, Eli.
Good evening, Mr. Holt.
Oh, hello, my sweet. Are you from the hotel?
That's right. I brought you this envelope.
Oh, thank you. You're awfully sweet. When Christmas comes, Santa Holtz will see that you are rewarded.
Oh, you mean you'll get something to fill my stocking?
I like what you've got in it already. goodbye, sweetie.
Goodbye.
Edward, I've made so many girls happy in Hollywood. It's really a shame.
Well, never mind that, Lou. I want to see those notices.
Really? Well, mm-hmm. Of course, notices, yes. The envelope. Here we are. Well, slap me down, Eddie. They sent the wrong one. Well,
wait a minute. What's that clipping there?
Oh, this one?
Yeah.
This is one that the Maharaja sent me from Bombay. Unfortunately, it's printed in Hindustani.
Well, go ahead and read it.
I wish I could, but like many a world traveler, I have only a fluent speaking knowledge of Hindustani. I can't read a word of it.
Oh, I see. Well, why don't you get Lal Ganga to read it for you?
A thought, Edward, a thought. I'll do it. Lal Ganga.
Buona.
Lal Ganga. Prodisi a clipping newspaper, press. Fondisi notices for ha.
Croehe bondene cedro gonda.
Murdona caropes la furga pimpilica. Pimpilica! He says he's going to read it out loud, Edward. I can hardly wait. Lal? Prodisi.
Buena.
Brana.
Murda cosna lo duce la pirde good newsy.
Good newsy?
Masala cosdina mora Maxwella housing.
Maxwella housing?
Seldaro noshi parvos cani good la dropping.
Good to the last drapola.
Malaro cornasis por di drip grindi.
Drip grindi?
Drip grindi marnote tala. Pordone sakirdi fizn holz stinkola.
Why, Edward, they say I'm dynamite.
Yeah, I see they do. You know, Lou, The last couple of weeks, I've been reading up on Hindu philosophy, and I'd like to know if it's true that they can make themselves insensible to pain.
You mean like walking on red-hot coals and pushing needles through their skin?
Yeah, that's right. Ask Lord Gaga if he can do it. Huh?
Well, of course. It's allowed.
Francis. A prodigy prende la sada e chadas in o ed penola.
No penola?
Bravo. Prodigy condas walking hat the coal la luna.
Casi lava.
No, prugi tristi a pushing nidala in a skinny ninino.
Frangane. What does he say?
Well, he says he can do all of those things and never even feel it.
Well, that's wonderful. Ask him if he'll stick this nail file through his nose.
Lalganga. Prodisi nail finola.
Fran.
Nail falola.
Falola.
Chodisti. In schnazola.
Mordona kazimpo molasa de purnia porgasik.
Well.
He says he'd be glad to show you how insensible he is to pain, except for one thing.
What's that?
Tonight he's got a splitting headache.
Oh, a headache, eh? I thought he wasn't playing very good today. Say, Lou, tell him I've got a great cure for a headache.
You have?
Uh-huh.
I'd like to know the cure.
Well, whenever I have a headache, I go home and my wife puts an ice bag on my head, makes me some hot milk, and then she kisses me until I fall asleep.
I'll tell him. Lalganga.
Okay,
Prodisi hedekano.
Merde.
Pro chades. Pri a wife all meredith wilsano. I se baganun. You had a didi.
Had a didi.
Fili trossa.
Trossane.
Hatte milkalalo.
Milkalalo lolo.
Milkalalo lolo. Then. Then. Prodigy kisses. He prodigy a sleep panano.
Mordare così per dolce parafis.
Well, did he say he'd try it?
Yes, he wants to know when will your wife be home.
Well, I'll see you later, fellas. I gotta get those.
Warren, I suspect that wonderful fragrance of freshly made coffee announces our familiar Thursday evening custom, eh?
It does indeed, Eddie. And tonight, in appreciation of her lovely voice, I'm going to serve Connie Boswell a very first cup of steaming, fragrant Maxwell House coffee.
Thank you, Warren. Drinking a cup of Maxwell House is simply carrying on an old Boswell tradition.
And an old American tradition, Connie, because every Thursday evening, when we pause for this friendly Maxwell House custom, thousands of people all over America pull up their chairs and join us in a cup of this coffee that's good to the last drop. And now, with our coffee, let's enjoy the music of Meredith Wilson. Music as rich and mellow as Maxwell House itself. Meredith? In just a moment, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back with all our regular cast. And in addition, we will bring you a preview of that fine Paramount picture, The Great Victor Herbert, with Alan Jones, Mary Martin, and Walter Connolly. In the meantime, we pause briefly for station identification.
It is now time for our friends in New York to bring you their part of good news. Maxwell House takes a very real pleasure in presenting a radio preview of one of the most satisfying films of the year. It is Paramount Pictures' grand musical experience, The Great Victor Herbert. You will hear the thrilling voice of Alan Jones, the charming and appealing Mary Martin, and a really moving performance by my friend Walter Connolly as Victor Herbert. And those three fine performers will sing and play the same roles they do in the picture. They're in Radio City now, waiting to bring you a glimpse of this dramatic story together with its glorious music. For tonight, let us take you back, not too many years ago, back to the days when the Charleston was the dance sensation, when crossword puzzles were beginning to replace Mahjong. And in a changing New York, one landmark has remained unchanged, Luschow's Restaurant on 14th Street. And tonight, more than ever, Luschow's is a symbol of gaiety and goodwill and sentiment. Green and white streamers swoop from the ceiling, and the chandeliers are glowing with good fellowship. For this is no ordinary evening. Tonight the town has turned out for a brilliant revival of one of Victor Herbert's famous operettas, and a group of the great composer's close friends are gathered together to do him great honor. And so, of course, the rafters echo to a toast sung to one of Victor Herbert's own bright melodies. We take you back to Lou Shaw's restaurant in New York, and the first speaking voice you hear will be that of a grand actor, Walter Connolly, in the role of Victor Herbert. All right, New York.
Bottoms up, bottoms up, bottoms up. Raise your glasses high and wave across your royal highness. Waving with happy days of happy heaven. I'm the morning answer. Happy days, happy days, happy days. You a fellow artist who'll be loved for all his kindness. Waving with a hallelujah cry. Here's happy days to you.
Thank you all for being at the theater tonight. And thank you for giving me so many memories, so many treasures, so many wonderful friendships through all the years. May I share one of my memories with you now?
Yes, of course.
Well, it all began on another of my birthdays, some 15 years ago, before Broadway tried so hard to imitate Coney Island. The days of Rectors, Delmonico's, and Shanley's. The days of lovely Lillian Russell and genial Diamond Jim Brady. The Gibson girl was all the rage, and stereoptic and slides were the parlor fad. Those were the days when this story began. It was my birthday, and I was at home working on a new operetta. Then, somewhere a band was playing, and Mrs. Herbert called to me to come quickly to the window. I threw it open, and around the corner on West End Avenue came Gilmore's 22nd Regiment Band, with a gay crowd following it. They hadn't forgotten my birthday. Just as they'd done for many years before, they formed a parade and headed for my house. When I brushed the tears from my eyes, I saw that standing in the carriage at the head of the parade was one of the brightest stars that ever sang a note on Broadway, John Ramsey. You all know John. He grinned at me and waved his hat, and he stood there in that carriage and held that throng and me spellbound.
Sweet mystery of life, at last I found thee.
Then John Ramsey reached down into the crowd and drew a slender, dark-haired girl up to his side. She was frightened, but she stood right there in the carriage and sang with him. And the two of them were beautiful to hear. I realized then how hectic John Ramsey was going to make things for me, or that girl. For weeks afterwards, John hounded me to give her a part in the new operetta. Her name was Louise Hall, and John was convinced she'd be a great star. I kept telling him I knew the girl could sing, but she had no stage experience. He brought Louise to my office, to the theater, even here to Lushow's, trying to convince me he was right. Then one night, I was giving a concert in the Bradley Davis Mansion out on Long Island.
I was especially anxious that night to have the Bradley Davis guest approve the duet for my new score. John and our prima donna, Marie Clark, had rehearsed the duet for days. So after our first selection, I announced, "Ladies and gentlemen, the next selection will be a duet from Eileen. I take great pleasure in presenting the Broadway star and your favorite, Mr. John Ramsay, who will sing with Miss..."
"Louise Hall, Victor. Miss Louise Hall."
"Oh, John, I'm scared."
"Come on, Louise.
You'll answer to me for this, John.
If you'll play, Victor, the audience will answer to Louise."
Of course, the girl was a sensation, but I guess the Irish in me kind of came to the fore. I felt that John Ramsay had bullied me into it. He'd not only risked his own reputation, but mine as well. So next day, when I heard a knock on the door of my office at the theater... "Come."
"Mr. Herbert."
"Oh, Miss Hall. What are you doing at the theater?"
"May I tell you how sorry I am about last night?"
"You apologize. I accept. Good day."
"Oh, but it was all my fault."
"It was not your fault. It was his. That's just like John Ramsay, to let somebody else take the blame."
"Oh, if it hadn't been for me, it never would have happened. John's just trying to help me. Please don't blame him. He's been wonderful."
"Wonderful? That egotistical, irresponsible, vain, pig-headed..." Don't talk to me about John Ramsay. Don't talk to me about
him." "Oh, but you're wrong about him, Mr. Herbert. He isn't vain. He just believes in himself."
"That's all he believes in, himself."
"You say he's irresponsible. He's just impulsive. He does things like that because he thinks he's right. And as far as being pig-headed, well, it isn't that at all. It's just determination. Don't you see?"
"Yes. Yes, I see. Everything I say about him, everything that he does wrong, you make it sound right. You're in love with him."
"Yes, I am. Very much."
"Then I'm sorry for you."
"Why?"
"Because he'll never love you. He's in love with success, not you. He'll never marry you. Never."
"Do you really believe that, Victor?"
"Of course I believe it. You're married already. Married to your career."
"You're wrong, Victor. I'm married to Louise."
"Married? You?"
"Well, we were married this morning, and I wanted to tell you, but you wouldn't give me a chance."
"Marriage? Well, I'm glad I was wrong. Congratulations."
"Thank you, Victor. Thank you.
I know just the thing for you two. Just the thing. Come along. Come along with me." "Quiet, quiet on the stage, please, please. I have a very special announcement. Ladies and gentlemen, meet your new leading lady, Miss Louise Hall, who just became Mrs. John Ramsay."
"Oh. Victor, you're wonderful. Thanks."
"Oh, John, the lead."
"I knew we'd do it, darling. You won't regret this, Victor. Before long, you'll be putting Louise Hall's name in lights."
And soon the name of Louise Hall was coupled with that of John Ramsay wherever music was played.
They made an unforgettable twosome, and their voices would have inspired any composer. At any rate, they inspired me. They set all America to dreaming, and I was happy to provide the theme for that dreaming. So, as the years went by, with one operetta success after another, Louise Hall did become the great star John had predicted she'd be.
Now playing, John Ramsay in her regiment with Louise Hall.
There once was an owl, an intelligent fowl, so they tell me.
He hid in the shade of the dark branches made all the day.
But one night at one dark, through the flower in the park, so stealthily and sly, it flew.
Now playing, Louise Hall and John Ramsay in Princess Pat.
Yes, it was a proud day for John Ramsay when Louise Hall's name was first placed in lights beside his own. But it was a day of heartache when he saw her name above his own. On that day, he stormed into the theater.
Victor.
Oh, hello, John.
What's the meaning of that billing in front of the theater?
Oh, the billing. Well,
I don't care
what you thought, Victor. My contract clearly states that no one is to be starred over me.
Louise is starred with you, not over you.
Her name is on...
We thought you'd be pleased. She's your wife.
That has nothing to do with it. This is strictly professional. Victor, you've got to change the order of those names.
Now, John, let's talk this over. Your draw last year, it fell off. Louise, they like her. She gets more popular every day.
She's had the best parts, that's all. It's my name that pulls them in.
Now, cool off, my boy, cool off. It's all right, it's all right. Louise is a grand girl. She called me this morning. We had a long talk.
Oh, so that's it. She talked it over with you. She demanded that billing.
No. Come here. Take a look out of the window. That's the billing she demanded.
Why, they're changing the sign. It's... Her name is below mine. Oh, I'm sorry, Victor.
And so John Ramsey left us. And because he left, the theater lost Louise, too. That's why she retired so suddenly years ago. I invited Louise here to Luchow's tonight, hoping she'd sing for old time's sake, to sort of make this evening complete. But she tells me she's only a teacher of music now, and her singing career ended when John Ramsey went away.
But a man in love can't stay away from his wife forever, Victor.
John Ramsey.
John Ramsey. John. Oh, John, dearest.
Hello, sweetheart. Tonight at Victor's revival, I caught a glimpse of you. And suddenly I knew that neither singing, a career, nor life itself had any meaning without you. I knew you'd be here with Victor tonight. I hoped you'd be happy I came.
Oh, John, dear, I am happy. So very happy.
Of course she is. And I want to be happy, too. This is a big evening for me, you know. I insist that you both sing the music I wrote for just you two. And see that you stay together from now on.
Turn you now to Hollywood.
Ah, that was a grand job, Alan Jones, Mary Martin, and Walter Connolly. Those of us who have seen the picture can tell you, too, what a grand job Paramount has done with the great Victor Herbert. Of course, in our very abbreviated preview, we didn't try to tell the whole story. So when you see it, you'll find a real dramatic surprise. And you'll find yourself carried away on the wings of over 20 immortal Victor Herbert melodies. And you'll hear a lovely young singer with a very different voice, Little Suzanne Foster. Incidentally, the Al Goodman who conducted our orchestra in New York tonight was also the conductor of Victor Herbert's last operetta, The Dream Girl. So I think congratulations are in order all around.
Daddy!
What is it, Snooks?
I want to sing with Lou Holtz again.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a second, I'll ask him. Oh, Lou!
Yes, Daddy? Oh, hello, Snooksy.
Hello,
Holtzie. Lou, Snooks wants to sing with you. You know that Sola Mio business?
Why, I'd be very happy to accommodate your gorgeous offspring, Daddy.
Ooh, I like him.
Now, listen, Snooks. Mr. Holtz is nice enough to let you sing. Why don't you do something else for him? Recite that little poem I taught you.
Oh, a poem? I just love to hear it.
All right.
Go on. A little ship was on the
sea.
It sailed along so pleasantly. It was the peaceful time of
night.
And all was calm and all was
bright?
Fine. Would you like to hear her recite another one, Lou?
No, thank you. She was a sensation with the last one. Let's sing.
Ma, you're cooking with gas.
Edwin Arnold tried to get on a streetcar. He didn't know whether to get on in front or behind. The conductor said, "Which end will you get in, sir?" Eddie said, "I'll get them both in if you don't mind." Oh, soul of me.
Oh, soul of me.
Oh, soul of you.
Oh, so
do you. Zazoo, zazoo, zazoo.
Zazoo, zazoo, zazoo.
Dig, dig, dig.
Dig, dig, dig.
Well, all right.
Well,
and now we hear from Snooksy.
My little brother plays the piano by ear. Said a fella named Andy Chickas. I said, "That's nothing. You ought to see Uncle Louie. He fiddles with his whiskers."
Oh, oh, love me.
Oh, so
oh, so are you.
Oh, so are you.
You made that one up yourself.
I made that one up myself.
And now...
He's
now,
funny, I think.
And now we hear from Meredith.
When I worked on a farm, all the other Mason City boys could beat me pulling a plow. But I beat them all getting milk from the cattle, because I had a pull with the cow.
Oh, soul of me.
Oh, soul of me.
Oh, soul of you.
Oh, soul of you.
La-di-da-di. La-di-da-di.
Loo-doo-doo-doo.
Loo-doo-doo-doo.
Hoodoo.
Hoodoo.
Hello.
Hello.
And now we hear from Lal Ganga.
Para ver a cara nozia perdanha, mora cujilipazifia.
He says, of all the big questions facing us today, this one puzzles the nation.
Marekure donela paz nifes do king prodakius in veskin.
He says, why do they put the holes in Swiss cheese when it's the Limburger that needs the ventilation?
Oh, soul of me.
Oh, soul of me.
Oh, soul of you.
La 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 la.
La la la
la.
Say, Warren.
Yes, Eddie.
Warren, here's a question put to me recently. Which makes the better coffee, an old-fashioned coffee pot or a modern drip coffee maker?
Well, Eddie, that's pretty much a matter of opinion among coffee-making experts. But there's one thing they all agree upon.
What's that, Warren?
To make good coffee, it's just as important to use the right grind of coffee as it is to use the right kind. You see, today, with all the different ways of making coffee, even the very best coffee, ground one all-purpose way, couldn't give you the most in flavor or economy.
Well, why is that?
Well, when you make coffee correctly by the drip method, the water passes through the coffee just once. Now, that means unless the coffee you use is ground just fine enough, the full coffee flavor won't be extracted completely, no matter how much you use. And that's just why Maxwell House comes in a special drip grind. A grind you can always trust to give you clear, full-bodied, flavorful coffee in any type of drip or glass coffee maker. But those of you who make coffee in percolator or coffee pot know the water comes in contact with your coffee not once, but many times. Now, this means you need the regular grind Maxwell House to stand up in the longer brewing and give you the rich, satisfying coffee you should expect every day. So whether it's drip or regular you need, just choose the Maxwell House grind that's right for your way of making coffee. From the day you do, friends, I'm sure you'll say something like this.
Maxwell House, in the grind that's exactly right for my way of making coffee, gives me extra flavor and economy, extra coffee enjoyment.
Week after week, as Meredith Wilson has commissioned and introduced fine new compositions of American composers here in the concert hall, he has become more and more convinced that this is true. Tonight we are proud to present the eighth new American composition, the world premiere of an American barcarolle, written especially for this series by Harry Warren. And for the first time in the concert hall presentations, Meredith Wilson himself will play the flute solo. All right, Meredith, Harry Warren's American barcarolle. My compliments to you, Meredith, and to Harry Warren, who composed the American Barcarolle. Next week, the concert hall series continues with the ninth new American composition, written by one of America's best-known and most beloved popular composers, who did such a fine job of writing the score for The Wizard of Oz, Harold Arlen. Next week, Meredith Wilson's performance, the world premiere of his American Minuet. I hope you all enjoyed the great Victor Herbert tonight as much as I did. Now, here's a surprise for you. Next week, we're going to bring you an adaptation of another Paramount picture. Yes, next week, Max Fleischer's full-length picture cartoon in Technicolor, Gulliver's Travels. With us, too, sing the songs they sing in the picture will be Jessica Dragonette and Lanny Ross, two favorites of all you Maxwell House listeners. Also, our regular cast, Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks, Hanley Stafford as Daddy, Connie Boswell, Meredith Wilson's music, and, of course, yours truly, Edward Arnold. Is it a date? I hope so. Good night.
This is Warren Hull reminding you that Roaster Fresh Maxwell House coffee comes in both 1 and 2 pound super vacuum cans, and that if you use lots of coffee, you'll find extra economy and convenience in the 2 pound size. And now, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's now, more than ever, good to the last drop.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.